Hello, Namaste, Adab, Zindabad. Welcome to another episode of Fursat Feminism. I'm Arundhati.
I'm Deepa.
And today we have Ashika with us. Hi, Aski.
Hi.
Ashika and I studied together in undergrad. We met at Miranda House studying history. Over 3 years of sort of studying history and understanding how Ashika also approaches academia, which is through a really fun, quirky lens of interest in equal parts in corsets and firearms. She managed to help me look at every phase of history through these two lenses. And then we've presented a fair few interesting presentations on the sari and jazz music and all sorts of things from a historical lens. So Ashika, let the cat out of the bag, but Ashika really wants to talk about fashion and femininity through the lens of like lingerie today, which is lingerie. I mean, find me a woman who does not have an opinion. But Ashika, what led you to wanting to talk about it on the podcast today?
The obvious thing for me would be that women, regardless of how extreme they are on the feminist or not so feminist category, we all have one thing in common, which is breasts. And lingerie is a topic that's often intrigued me because it's always been historically something that has been viewed from the male gaze, or that is the perception out there that you need to look sexy for a man. I think that is a topic I really wanted to tackle today because being up close and personal, both like with my own lingerie as well as in the industry I work in, I mean, it's not that black and white anymore. And I definitely see quite a positive change in terms of women sort of taking back their femininity and their sexuality and their power that comes with femininity and sexuality. So I do see feminism as taking a different direction for me right now, based on whatever I've seen. So that is something I sort of wanted to talk about today. And also being a bit of a history nerd, which is how I met you, Arundhati. We were sitting in the Miranda lawns, I remember, and we bonded over this paper by Gloria Steinem called If Men Could Menstruate. And, you know, for me, I think that was my first sort of dipping my toes into the academic side of feminism, because I realized later that my entire upbringing had not just been feminist, but it had been almost female supremacist. It's a bit risky to put that out there, but I grew up in a very strongly matriarchal household. So till I actually maybe went out there into the world, for me, like, mom being head of the house, Nani being the matriarch, it was just the norm. I understand that puts me in a position of privilege because for me, feminism was not something I had to fight for. Women's rights was not something I had to fight for. It was something that was always there. And I really understand this now. And I understand I cannot dismiss feminism in its more academic or more extreme format. All over the world and historically, this is not a privilege women have had, unfortunately. And I just want to do whatever I can to sort of get past that and to just have that conversation and to talk about it from my point of view, where I sort of grew up with two very strong women who were both feminist in their own ways. There was my grandmother, and she was a product of the 50s and 60s. And obviously, her and my grandfather had their traditional gendered roles. He worked. She ran the house. But my God, their relationship was egalitarian because it was a very clearly demarcated thing based on gender, which was a natural product of their times. But I would see her constantly trying to subvert what society would try and impose on her. Like, for example, when they were younger, they lived in Calcutta. And there was a particular club which did not allow women. And she made it a point there to go there, sit at the bar and smoke a cigarette just to be like, you know what? F you. Or I remember, like, one of my earliest memories as a kid was we'd gone to a wedding for a distant relation, and it was a Kashmiri wedding, and initially there was no alcohol, and there was another day where alcohol was served quietly but just to the men, and it was frowned upon that, I mean, women could not drink, and my grandmother would not have any of that, and she completely organized all of my uncles into like this little group of people that operated a bar out of the boot of her car, because she just could not bear the fact that, you know, it was like a gender distinct thing, like, oh, the men can drink, the women must be demure. So this whole idea of women being demure, she tossed that out of the window. She was quite a character. She was a fierce character. And I also remember her having the most self-soothing, self-loving skincare routine. And that really got me thinking about sort of why is it that certain things that are considered traditionally feminine, what makes fashion being one of them, lingerie being one of them, what makes people dismiss it as frivolous? What makes that original bra-burning feminism want to do away with that? And where did this idea actually come about from, that anything that has to do with beauty or creation or being creative or even self-care, why is it dismissed as frivolous? Why is makeup dismissed as frivolous? Or why do we automatically assume that women are doing these things for men? That question really sort of always fascinated me, because I know I don't always do those things for men. And fashion itself, to be honest, not a lot of things that are considered fashion forward or whatever, like on paper, attractive to the opposite sex. It's more about making a statement. It's more about expressing yourself through how you dress. So this whole thing sort of got me started on that tangent of like, where did this idea come from, that fashion is not a serious thing? And I'm not angry or bitter about it, because again, for me, I grew up seeing a very strong role model in my grandmother, and seeing a very strong role model in my mom, who was a genuine product of the 80s. She was quite a badass. She was very career focused, but I also saw her juggle and be like a really good mother. But her mothering sort of raised me to be very independent. It always raised me to sort of question things that I was just told to do. And I think seeing these two very different role models and these very two different versions of feminism, I saw two women living that feminist life without actually talking about it or trying to label it or trying to categorize it or pigeonhole it into this kind of feminism is right and this kind is wrong. So I think what I was taught to believe was that feminism truly is about having that freedom of choice and having that freedom of expression. But I acknowledge my privilege in saying this, because not everybody has that choice. Women out there sometimes do need to fight for that right to equal pay. They do need to fight against men oppressing them by telling them what to wear, or society telling them what to wear. And the society telling you what to wear is something I have experienced in India, whether it's going out and not feeling like I cannot be completely comfortable in a skirt and having to cover up, or, you know, being that whole idea of achhe ghar ke log aise nahi karte, like ladkiyan aise nahi karte. So, yeah, I think that's just what made me want to explore this tangent of sort of fashion and feminism, and specifically lingerie and feminism, because it's something so close to your body, you know, and it's something you have to deal with every day. I mean, love them, hate them, you do need some kind of bra to feel supported. So
it's been really strange how my own journey with lingerie or bras or even underwear goes, because I feel like I'm 31. Until maybe I was 27, 28, I had not experienced what a well-fitting bra looks like. It's just so typical of things that women experience, that you have to access the hush circles to have access to this information. Otherwise, you live your whole life thinking, I must feel uncomfortable. My boobs must not be the right size for the kind of clothes that are being made. There is something wrong with my body. It didn't even strike me that you could get yourself fitted for a bra. Somebody can take your measurements and there can be a bra that can be made to your size. I thought your boobs have to fit into a number and a letter, and you have to find some sort of magical, you know, number letter combination that is you. The number letter combinations, of course, also become like the most male gazy things. When Deepa joined Anandi for the first time, I had discovered well-fitted bras and I was on a proselytizing mission. And there is no way, I had no access to this information till now. Now I will spread it far and wide. I will shout it from the fucking rooftop. So anybody who is to meet me, it's literally like I have flashed Deepa. I'm like lifted my shirt and been like, look at this bra, look at it, touch this. Like the contour of the bra actually sits, like it actually sits on my body as opposed to like 3 inches off it. It's one of those unconscious things as a woman, and I of course include trans women in this, that as you kind of start to feel out clothes, right? Any clothes in life. Underwear that makes sense to the clothes that you're putting on is so essential to feeling yourself in those clothes. Just feeling yourself in those clothes, regardless of how you look, because most of the time, all you're feeling is the underclothes that you're wearing. And that's like supremely like difficult to find the right size in. What I also realized over time is that like when I put on weight in the boobs. This is again something nobody said, told me. Okay, this is... It's ridiculous how little information there is. Again, you start to feel like, "Arey yaar, achhe khaase fitted bras mil gaye the. Ye bhi nahi fit ho rahe. What is this ridiculous sorcery that I'm a part of?"
And what's ridiculous is that the bra sizing system we have today in the world that has just become the norm with the alphabets and the numbers. You know, it can be traced back to Victorian times. It hasn't changed since then, and you know why? That's because people who manufacture bras, I'm talking of the designers of bras, and I'm trying very hard to change this, by the way, by actually making them myself. People who manufacture bras tend to be men.
Sellers are also men. My first experience of buying a bra was me walking into a store with my mother, and this guy looks up at me and tells my mother what my size is going to be. And I lived with that size for another 2 years because the man told me, "Ye man, inka iska itna hoga size." I didn't know what size meant. I didn't know why I was wearing that bra, but I was given that bra. So,
can I tell you something, Deepa? Something that will absolutely, completely shake the foundation right now. 36A, a 34B, a 32C and a 30D are all the same size. So as somebody that's actually studied this, like in a very specialized kind of way, I wanted to get to the bottom of it. Kya ho raha hai? Why am I sometimes an A cup? Why am I sometimes a D cup? This doesn't make sense. And that's the thing. There's so much mystery around this. And there's so many myths around bras, like underwires cause breast cancer. You know, like this one rumor comes out and then it becomes like the, you know, this legend embossed in stone forever. Or, you know, like push-up bras are like bad for you, or like they sexualize your body, or even the very fact that lingerie exists to please men, I think is ridiculous, because in my personal experience, men, to be honest, they just want to get it off. They don't really care. Like, you could be wearing a brown paper bag. If you are like willing to get naked in front of a man, he does. Like, okay, some men do. You know, this idea that if you, like for me, what I really struggled with is that, how can I be a feminist, but also this girl, this girly girl that likes her dresses and likes her lingerie and likes her lace? You know, this, that sort of identity crisis for me was, like you said, Aru, I'm somebody that is interested in corsets. I'm equally interested in guns. And when I tell people this, the shock and disbelief that how can you be somebody that does Krav Maga, but designs lace? Like this whole, whoa, like, this dichotomy.
You mean you have layers? What does that mean?
And you know, this always brings me back to like this idea of like this Madonna whore complex that the patriarchy instills in us, where, you know, oh, she's the good girl. Oh, she's the person, you know, who you just hook up with. And you know what? I mean, I'm sorry, as a culture, the subcontinent as a culture has always reinstilled this idea that when you talk about, say, Durga, right? I was sort of reading a shlok, and one beautiful line translates to, "She who slays demons and chops off their heads, yet with her braided hair." So this idea of, in ancient India, femininity was never contradictory with being strong and being powerful. It was all part of the same package. And that is something, like, I just was very curious about, when did this break come between, why does being feminine make you less strong? Why does being feminine make you less relevant? Why does being feminine make you less frivolous? And say, even like the original versions of bra-burning feminism. And again, that was then, that was a reaction to the times in the 70s, where there needed to be a distinction, where people needed to break free of those bonds that, say, in the 50s, you know, clothes sort of, you had to dress a certain way. You had to break away from that. I get it. But I think now we've evolved beyond that. And I think we should continue the conversation in that direction, where we sort of begin to reclaim our femininity, if that is what we choose. I'm not saying everybody has to be feminine. I'm saying femininity and masculinity exist. I've met men who have some, straight men who have had some very feminine, traditionally feminine qualities, where they're empathetic, nurturing, they know how to cook, they will do istri for you, they will do laundry. And why is that seen as less manly? Why is a guy doing those things seen as sort of some kind of blow to his masculinity? Why does the patriarchy reinforce this idea that, you know, like this very black and white idea. Okay, you know, you are a girl. This is your position in the home, in a dress, in a bra, whatever. You are meant to please men. But no, you shouldn't please them too much. You should be a demure wife also. And so that's the thing. I just feel like we're perhaps transitioning to an interesting time where all these gender roles are beginning to sort of break free and they're sort of beginning to get a little more gray. But just this idea, ki, why is femininity a bad thing? And why do the original feminists reject femininity? Why do you have to have armpit hair? If you want to, that's fine. But why is somebody who's choosing to shave it being judged? Why is somebody who's choosing to not burn her bra be judged? You know, like this whole idea of feminism is the freedom of choice, but only if you do it the way we say how. I think that is something I've constantly questioned.
When you said in the beginning that all women have breasts, I wanted to say everybody has breasts. Men, trans people, everybody has breasts. But I'm just trying to say that, you know, this idea that on women, they need to be tamed and that they need to be caged. That obviously ties back to this idea of caging and monitoring sexuality and desire and performativity. But at the same time, the biggest contradiction, obviously, is in pop culture, there is this idea that large breasts are great, right? Like, I'm large breasts are sexy. And then you walk into a bra store or an underwear store and you realize, you know, all the bra types and all the great designs and all the flexibility that don't go over a C cup. How does that make sense? So you created dysmorphia across the board, right? You say, okay, that small-breasted women will get great bras, but they will feel shit about their breasts because they will be constantly reminded how they don't have big breasts. But they will be able to wear a lot of clothes and a lot of bras and a whole huge range of things. The people who have large breasts are going to constantly feel like, oh, maybe I am conforming to what I'm supposed to have, but I'm never feeling great about it because I don't have the bras to just feel comfortable, forget like showing off my cleavage. And almost across the board, I have been recommended, even when I go for fittings, been recommended a bra size smaller than what I should be wearing because this idea of your breasts being pushed up. And for many different reasons, that's not the kind of way in which I want my breasts to sit in a piece of clothing. And it's so difficult to find, say, a t-shirt bra that's not a push-up, a t-shirt bra that's not a padded. Something I remember early on when we were in Delhi, all of my clothes used to tailored in Gujarat. But it's like this huge societal secret that we all continue to play into, that bras for some reason are outside that ambit of things that you can get custom made, that you can customize to your body. And I'm also including underwear in that because, God, it took me a long time to get out.
You put on weight on your boobs. I put on weight on my butt. Like, it's a problem.
Yeah. And I mean, can we talk about how difficult it is to get panties that don't have elastic that
cuts into your skin? And that is literally why I've started making my own underwear. And I actually want to start, like what you said, tailoring lingerie to fit women. And, you know, here's the interesting thing. Bra sizing has always been based on Western body types because bras traditionally do come from the West, right? Like in India, what did we have? We had a dupatta to cover our nipples and everything else was free, right? And that's the thing. Nobody's actually even bothered to measure like women of different ethnicities. People are built differently. Indian women have wider hips, slightly flatter bums, bigger boobs. You know what I find ridiculous is that in India, where women generally do have relatively larger breasts, you can only get bra sizes from like your standard stores from like a 30A to maximum a 36D, right? I am the largest size on that spectrum and it's still a little tight. And the reason for that is because bras are something that, again, like you said, there's a lot of myth about how they're made. It's also a product where often people have been sort of made to accept that ye bas hai, chala lo isse kaam, you know? And especially because I feel like this is a thing because it pertains to women. It's a product specifically for women. So it's like, you can't be bothered to do better, like in like technology in other forms, like computers or whatever's gone on like by leaps. But with lingerie, I feel like, yes, now it's beginning to evolve. But for the last 100 years, it's pretty much been the same. Lingerie specifically, especially if it's lace or it's something pretty, or even fashion, is often dismissed as frivolous. Because, see, I understand the more extreme sides of fashion can be toxic, where it's seen as this thing that's unattainable and unreachable and you're not part of the cool crowd if you don't wear it. But fashion is a system that exists. when you wake up and you put clothes on your back, you are already a part of it. Whether you choose to be like a Steve Jobs and just wear turtlenecks every day for utility, or you choose to dress very flamboyantly and express who you are a part of it. Like, even by rejecting it, you are making a statement, and that's okay. It's your right to do that. For me, I see fashion as a form of freedom of speech, you know, and a way of expressing yourself. And it bothers me that it's dismissed often as, I promised I wouldn't sound bitter and resentful in this, and I'm not. For me, I see lingerie as something very subversive, because I've had situations where I've been told a place where I work to sort of wear a crisp white shirt and dress a certain way. And underneath, I was wearing bondage lingerie, because in my head, I was like, fuck you, I'm going to wear whatever I want inside. And you aren't ever going to know about it. Because it's so personal, it's so close to your body. The comfort factor is so important. And the fact that people don't even think about that. It's always very like, is it practical? And if it's practical, it must be ugly. Or is it racy and sexy? And if it's racy and sexy, it must be push your boobs up to like some other realm and poke you, and like it must be so expensive. And I think you can have beautiful bras that are comfortable and that you find beautiful. And like you said, it makes you feel like yourself. It should be something that's an extension of you. You shouldn't even be able to feel it on your body. You see,
I sometimes feel like I've never been a conscious sort of a person to make choices and say that this is my style or this is what I sort of wear. And when it comes to lingerie, I just feel like everything has happened on autopilot mode, and like people have made decisions for me and choices, and I'm just like, theek hai. I have a very interesting anecdote of how I actually started wearing a bra. Like, I was in 9th standard. I was studying in a missionary school, and we had this Christmas sort of a play. I was in the play, and my role was of this fairy godmother. And I was wearing this like for white gown that I was supposed to wear. And I didn't used to wear bra till that point. That was my mother's decision, right? This is rehearsal day and I'm supposed to wear my gown. And then the first time I wore my gown, my teacher looked at me and then she's like, don't you wear a bra? And I'm like, no, ma'am. Then she's like, what is this? Then she called up my mother and she's like, okay, like she's now like old enough to wear a bra. You should get a bra for her, this, that. And my mom is like fully adamant ki nahi abhi meri bachchi choti hai abhi dekh no. Then my mother just absolutely just refused to get a bra for me. And then I realized that all my classmates wear a bra by now. So why am I not wearing a bra? And then I go back home and there's this conversation my mother has with her friend. And then friend is convincing her that your daughter needs a bra. And then we go and buy this first bra that you're supposed to wear. What does that bra look like? It's like this white cotton, very basic white bra that you get in like these very small chotusa shop. So that happens. And I remember after that, my mother would buy all like undergarments, lingerie for me. I have never gone to a shop and bought anything. Like, she would go and whatever she gets, I just, you know, wear it. And this went on till I think bachelor's. And as Arundhati just mentioned, right, that you didn't know that your breasts can actually be measured. Like, there's somebody who can measure your breast and tell you that, okay. Or you can do it for yourself. That information was not something I had cared about till master's first year, I think. I think that Ashika kept saying that there is a choice and you make that choice. But I genuinely think that there is a huge sort of percentage of young women who don't really understand that it's a choice for them. I mean, it's just something that culturally
is indoctrinated, right?
So in schools, for example, in a school in UP, you cannot wear a colorful bra under a white t-shirt, you know. So there's just no way. You will find one or the other news reports coming up every second day or third day where, you know, they have made these young schoolgirls, 9th, 10th standard ki ladkiya, they are like punished because, why were you not wearing a white bra? You know, or your bra was visible, or why didn't you have some other layering over your bra so that it is not visible because you're provoking boys. So, I mean, this whole idea of lingerie being for yourself and then anything else in your clothing being for yourself is something that I've realized comes much later. Like, even in your own journey of being able to realize what choices mean for you and what your own agency is, this is absolutely my own opinion. I'm not like trying to paint a picture for everybody. It's very easy to say that I've not been interested. A more nuanced way of saying that is that there is a lot of discomfort I have with my own body, and there's a lot of unlearning that I'll have to do of not being a woman whose decisions are taken by other people, you know, because when you actually start asserting it as a choice, then it's something that you also have to keep, like, you know, asserting it in every other space. So, like, if I decide to wear a certain kind of cloth in a certain place, I'll have to make it a point that I don't give a shit ki matlab samne wala kya soch raha hai. That is not something I pick up as a battle in my life. I'm like, theek hai, if I'm in a rural area, I'll wear like a salwar suit and go. If I'm at my house, I'll always wear like something which covers my legs, because I'm just like, theek hai, matlab, I'm fine with this also, I'm fine with that.
Actually, we live in a society that this is often culturally indoctrinated into us. And for me, my first exposure to fashion was when I was a kid. I was not the prettiest child, right? In fact, I was quite funny looking. But anyway, and when I grew up, the emphasis was always on working hard and being a nice person, right? And my best friend growing up was beautiful. Like, she was so pretty. She looked like a doll. She was fair. She had golden hair. And she was always pretty. And throughout school, like, people would always, you know, being friends with somebody that pretty is tough. And it would affect me, because I could see the teachers, like, other people wanted to be her friend. She had everything going for her on the face of it. And I remember my mom sat me down, because I was very upset about this. And she's like, you know, it's okay. You know, like, pretty enough for who? It's always a relative thing. But there is one thing you have control over. It is how you present yourself to the world, whether it's in how you deal with people, or it's how you groom yourself. And that was when, for me, that was the first moment where I registered ki there is something I can actually do to sort of... I saw fashion as armor in a way. Like, it's something that makes me feel secure. It's something that makes me feel like I can control how I present myself to the world. And the same goes for makeup, because there's also this misconception that women wear makeup for men. Trust me, boys don't like red lipstick. They really don't. I love red lipstick. I wear it despite the fact that boys don't like it. For me, it's war paint. For me, I wear it because it makes me feel confident. I walk into a meeting with a fully made up face. Internally, it's something very psychological about it for me. Internally, I feel confident. It just affects something in my psyche. Also, like, I notice when I get depressed, the first thing I let go is my grooming and the way I dress. And then it makes me feel even worse. So again, it's that for me. This is a very personal experience. I'm not saying it should be like this or everybody should be like this. This has been my interaction with it, coming from a position where this is sort of the environment I grew up in, where women were allowed to have that space to work and be powerful, but to also be nurturing and loving, but to also be beautiful in their own unique way, right? So I find it very interesting what you said about this cultural indoctrination, because I did also face that simultaneously after a certain age. When I was a little kid, I used to wear cute little shorts or whatever. But when I hit my teens, there was this thought that, okay, now you should not wear short clothes because you're developing breasts and people can see them. And you notice men staring, even when you're 13. It's disgusting, but you do. And that was again when a bra for me was like armor in a way. And I'm not sure this is a good or a bad thing, because why should somebody be armored all the time, right? But for me, it was just like, I am going to hide my nipples and nobody else. It made me feel safe. So I think that is why lingerie is something I've always felt very close to. Because again, like you, Deepa, in the beginning, my mother used to also shop, and it was very basic white stuff. And I remember the first time I went and bought a fancy bra, and it was again with you, Aru. We went to a shop in Sarojini.
Yes.
And again, one of those uncles was sitting and he pulled out a dabba. Like, you know, like, yeah. I felt like Harry Potter going to Ollivander's. He was like, the bra chooses you. It was in a dabba. And also, you know, like, when you first become sexually active, that stress of, oh my God, like, somebody else is going to see my bra, you know, that tension. And to be honest, boys, I mean, bless their souls, they don't care. Like, they're in the room, they're just like, huh, that's just whatever. I'm just happy to be in a room with a naked woman.
But it's so funny you say that, you know, boys don't notice types of bras you wear, but will definitely use your bra size as bragging rights. This I can assure you. Because the first time I was ever compared to some other woman's bra size was not by a woman. It was by an ex-boyfriend. He did not know my bra size at that time. And he literally, with one look, decided, oh, I know these things. And, you know, my ex-girlfriend was also a double D. And at that time, whatever sizing I thought, I had still not gotten into the sizing revolution. But so I was like, no, I'm not a double D. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, and already felt lesser than, you know, in that moment.
But you know, one thing where I feel slightly smug and powerful, the terror a man experiences when he cannot work a bra hook.
Oh yes!
To make them more complicated. You gotta work for it. Nowadays, especially with lingerie, the pretty stuff is something you just buy because it makes you feel self-indulgent. And there's also a certain shame that is associated with self-indulgence. Because I think there's always this perception in society that women need to take care of other people, or women need to not be vain, which again brings me back to fashion and frivolity. And I actually managed to, I went down a rabbit hole of academic stuff to figure out ki kahan se ye shuru hua. And it actually happened in the mid, towards the end of the 18th century, because that is when the Industrial Revolution sort of took off. You know, you'd be surprised to know that the first high heels were invented for a man. It was Louis XIV because he was short and he wanted to be taller. But this idea, this separation of men's clothing being functional and women's clothing being to attract men, only happened towards the end of the 18th century. I mean, believe it or not, in Tudor times, men wore corsets. And women wore corsets for functional reasons. Their outfits were heavy. They needed something to actually support it. Men wore corsets to flatten the bare belly. And say in the court of Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth I, men's fashions became sexualized because she had a roving eye. Like, she would always be checking out her courtiers, you know, who should I favor now? And their trousers became tighter and tighter and tighter because she had a thing for men's calves. So there have been historic instances where men's fashion has been sexualized. So this, all of this happened sort of, I would say, right after the Industrial Revolution, where, and it sort of got set in stone towards the end of World War II, because there was this dichotomy. Okay, men dress for function, for serious matters, for work, which is why we have the suit, because it's simple, work and war. But then the bourgeois men, when they wanted to separate themselves from the aristocracy, you know, they wanted to be austere, they wanted to be hardworking, you know, because they were hardworking capitalists or whatever, right? Didn't want to be decadent like the aristocracy, but they wanted to show their money somehow, ki kaise dikhaye they're successful. So that went into their wives' clothes. And the reason fashion was dismissed as frivolous is because in Victorian times, women were expected to be good little wives. And I'm talking mainly with regards to Western sort of culture, because that is what I studied. But how are these women to entertain themselves in a society where they were not allowed to work, not allowed to vote? Their domain became making clothes, dressmaking, making lace. And of course, this was dismissed by men, because anything women did, a way to put women down is to say that whatever they do is frivolous. So this idea of fashion being frivolous pretty much is also rooted in patriarchy, because it is that one way that women had that freedom of thought and expression when they couldn't put it anywhere else.
That was part one of our episode. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned. When you were talking earlier about what is fashion, like what is at its heart fashion, I was thinking a lot, like Deepa said, about, you know, things that led me to my current relationship with fashion. And I'm not sure I can define it. I enjoy dressing up. That I can tell you. I enjoy expressing myself through clothes. That also I know. How does that put me vis-a-vis the fashion industry? I'm not sure. How does that put me vis-a-vis other things? I'm not sure. But you know what's most interesting is that recently I was looking at all my photos from like when I was younger. What I realized is that my specific sense of what I wear has not changed almost at all. Okay. All my life. Like from the point where I kind of started having some agency in what clothes I could pick for my body. In terms of colors, silhouettes, and textiles, it has not dramatically shifted at all. But what has dramatically shifted is my perception of how fashionable I am. And you know what that was? It was very simple, yeah? I've been wearing cotton block print materials pretty much all my life. Born in Gujarat to a mother who was obsessed with hand block, hand loom. Both such buzzwords today, but were almost nothing in the 90s, okay? Handblock handloom was on my body all the time. And throughout high school, I remember all the fashionable girls, quote unquote, around me were wearing skirts, you know, mini skirts, dresses, you know, things that showed off, you know, that hugged you in the right places, jersey material. I was mostly in cottons. Nothing quite hugged me, right? It was sort of more loose fitting, whatever. So I saw that as fashion. What I did was clothing. What they did was fashion. Because I was, again, this utilitarian functional idea of I need to dress myself. There needs to be something on my body. So these are the clothes on my body. Then I go to Delhi. And within sort of the first few months, I go to college and Ashika is every day sort of admiring different things I'm wearing, right? Like, she's like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. Where did you get that from? That's such an interesting silhouette. Oh, I'd never thought of it this way. And then I go to my PG and there's another friend there who's just like, oh my God, the colors you put together, text, these like prints that you put together. And both of these sort of this ways of seeing me were articulating my choice for me more than I was able to until then. I was also maybe actively, of course, rejecting that choice because this idea of frivolousness, because I was so keen to be one of the boys, right? Ki matlab, of course, I would dress not for the male gaze. I'm like, I'm just dressing for function. So when Ashika saw me, when, you know, the friend at the PG saw me, when everybody started seeing that there is intention in what you're doing, Arundhati, there is some sense you have of whatever you are doing. Suddenly, overnight, I'm starting to feel like, oh, I have a style. Okay. I have a style. I have a sense. Maybe I haven't worked out the science of it all. So I might not be able to replicate it on somebody else or tell you, give you tips or anything. But I know what I wear. I think another woman is able to recognize when I am comfortable in the clothes that I'm wearing and what intentionality I bring to what I'm wearing much more than a man would understand. And it's so interesting that you said, na, Ashika, that the first thing to go when you're depressed or low is you dress frumpy, right? Like this choice to dress frumpy.
And not frumpy as much as I think you stop. For me personally, it's the first thing I let go.
Yeah, correct. So, and that I experienced so deeply. I spoke about this in the breakup podcast, but it's so directly related here that after one of the biggest breakups of my life, the first thing I consciously dropped was, of course, my hair. I've done a lot, but more important, no, this was before I wanted to feel good. This is when I wanted to wallow and feel terrible. And it was when I just put three pairs of clothes in my wardrobe and I said, I'm just going to shuffle between these three. Like one will get washed and put to the bottom of the pile. And this is how I will take choice out of my fashion. I will take all style out of my fashion. I will take, you know, that it's the first thing I let go because I was like this idea. And it was that moment of also realizing that despite everything else, I was still seeking with my clothes to keep this man or to stay attractive to him or to, you know, to be. And since then, yeah, I've apologized tons to my clothes. Like, you did not deserve that.
Like, you know, Arundhati, like, I mean, you both keep talking about, I mean, Ashik, not keep, but both of you have mentioned this thing about how, like, your state of mental being is impacting how you dress. And this is like something very interesting that I had sort of at some point talked to my therapist with, was the fact that, so like I have anxiety, right? Like I have severe anxiety issues. And One of the interesting things with anxiety that happens to me is that you are consistently feeling that people are watching you. Like there is something that makes you feel like, so you want to be as hidden as possible. You know, you try to do things that don't make you stand out a lot. Like it has to be, you have to just merge somewhere so that, you know, you're not in the eyes of the people. And then like basically my therapist asked me that, what do you do for yourself? So she asked me, and she was essentially trying to find out that if there is some self-care routine or something that I have. And I'm like, I like cooking, I like reading, I do these things, I like journaling, but nothing to my body. Like I don't do a lot of things to my body. I don't like going to like salons or like doing all those self-care things. I don't want to invest in a lot of beauty products. I just don't do all of those things. Now that we're talking, also this is hitting me that I have always made a conscious choice. Like every time I'm choosing a cloth, even today, there are times that I've changed into a cloth and I've thought that this doesn't look like me because it's making me stand out a lot. Or it's making me different from what I usually look like. So I will not wear this. And I've changed from those clothes. Like I have a pile of clothes right now in my cupboard that I bought thinking that, okay, I will wear this at some point. And I've never had the courage of wearing it because I just don't want to stand out. I just feel like at this point in the space, I just want to not be seen as much. And that is, I don't know if it's a comfort zone, it's a self-defense mechanism, it's whatever it is. Like it's also a way of taking care of myself and to some extent that clothing in that sense should not be something that makes me be more visible. Because, so the thing is, I continuously keep getting into these loops of the fact that the other person will judge me or like I'm getting judged by the person. So I can get into these cycles of overthinking if I've left the place or said something, and then clothing can just add to it, you know, that, oh my God, maybe I was wearing something like this and that's why, you know, this happened. So that's why I've not ever sort of made an extra effort to experiment or change things or like do something which sort of asserts my identity in that sense.
The first thing that comes to mind when you say that is, I remember when I was in college, there was this whole controversy about this garment called the burkini, which was basically swimwear made for Muslim women who otherwise did not feel comfortable wearing swimsuits and swimming. So burkini was basically, it was like a scuba diving suit, full sleeves with a full hood, not to cover your face, but imagine it's like a hijab on top, but it's a bodysuit. And it was seen as a very interesting garment because, now, again, the hijab, the burqa, the niqab, it, in the context of Islam, it has a whole bunch of different connotations. From one perspective, you can see it as something that men have imposed on women. But there are certain Muslim women I know who sometimes do prefer to be covered up. And whether it's indoctrination, whether it's what they believe, sometimes they just feel more comfortable being covered up. And I know it's true because there are, like when I go to certain parts of the city, I just feel more secure if I have a dupatta. I feel a little more secure if I sort of have a shrug covering me up. Especially in college, I remember I designed a whole range of dresses for myself that were cut like anarkali kurtas. I'd have a churidar, I'd have a dupatta. And then when I'd want to go out later, I'd lose the churidar and the dupatta and the same thing would be a dress. So it was very... It gave me agency as to I could control what came on and what came off. And I, in that sense, I think the chunni or the dupatta is quite a genius garment in the context of Indian clothing because it gives you that. And so is the sari, by the way, because it allows you to expose or cover whatever you are comfortable with, right? In the moment, in that context. And so, you know, like when this whole burkini controversy came up, burkinis were being banned in France because the French government was just like, you know, you need to stick with our culture. But then it stopped those very women who had finally managed to step out of the confines of a burqa and go swimming. They were being attacked for wearing a burkini. But then women are also attacked for wearing a bikini in certain cultures. So my problem, I think both things are equally problematic because in both cases, it is the patriarchy telling a woman what she should and should not wear. What Deepa talked about is her own feelings about what clothing for her is something that she wants to blend in. And that's okay if she wants to blend in because that is her choice and her agency, right? Or it's the fact that she's like, abey yaar, I don't want to constantly make a statement with my clothes. Just leave me alone. And I think that's okay. That's perfectly fine. Choice fatigue is a, And there are days where I also have 3 t-shirts, and on work days especially, I'm like, okay, I need to wear this. I don't want to think about this. But then there are days where I also want to wear things. So I don't think there's anything wrong with one way or the other. I think it's just as long as that is what you're comfortable with. It gets tricky when somebody else's opinion of what you wear starts making an impact. And for me, in a way, my experience was sort of the opposite to what happened with you, where for me, in fact, toning down my fashion was because there was a boy I was dating, and he had a problem with me dressing up because he did not like to dress up and he was quite casual. And I absolutely adored him, and I thought like he was amazing. And suddenly, like when I would, like I remember the day also, he was taking me to a friend's party, and I just wanted to cross-check what the dress code would be. And I normally wear a dress because I like dresses. I feel free, they're loose. And he's like, I don't know, maybe it'll be casual, just wear something casual. And that is when I went contrary to my natural instincts and I started dressing down. Just so the person I was with would not feel threatened. And that led me into a whole different spiral where I started dressing. For me, like being flamboyant, being out there, whatever, like certain guys would be like, oh my God, she's trying too hard. And, you know, like she's so desperate for attention, or those thoughts would echo in my mind. And I'd be like, maybe I shouldn't wear red lipstick. Maybe it's too much for them. Maybe I will look older than him. Maybe he'll think I'm a certain kind of girl. And that is when I sort of lost myself for a bit. Because for me, then that active choice of wearing jeans and a t-shirt, which if I had chosen to wear that for myself, take care. Like if I'm wearing it right now for work, fine. But when I was consciously thinking, I need to wear jeans and a t-shirt because he'll be in jeans and a t-shirt. And if I wear a really pretty dress, like there'll be a mismatch and he will feel threatened by me and then he won't love me anymore. That is where it becomes problematic.
When I started dating this person, my ex-partner, I have never dressed up for anybody. So I'm like, why will I dress up for him? And I remember I was in my hostel and one of my roommates was like, you're going on a date. You can't go like this. I'm like, okay. And then she decided ki main makeup karungi tera. And I'm like, cool. And she did something on my face. I was like, okay. And I am immediately uncomfortable with any form of makeup, you know, immediately. Like it just feels heavy on my face. And that just visible. And I remember going on for that date, and I'd met him before, of course. We've met many times before, this was a Valentine's Day date sort of a thing. And then he looks at me and he's like, what's happening to you? And I'm like, I don't know. I was told that I'm supposed to dress up like this for a date. I mean, there is a male gaze. This was something I've experienced through women a lot in my surroundings. The reverse has also happened. So my best friend Bhavna was the first person who has ever applied makeup with my full consent from my part. She always makes it a point if I'm around her, she's like, main kuch kar deti hun, theek hai. And I think she's the only person I'm like properly comfortable with. Like I can walk up to her and say that, maybe I would want an eyeshadow, or like maybe I would want this, because she doesn't make me feel like this makeup is important because your face doesn't look good enough like this. I mean, she likes doing this in a similar way as she likes painting, you know, it's that sort of soothing for her. And she's like, it's an art for me. I like doing that. Absolutely changed my perspective about makeup and generally about so many things in fashion. I mean, you just need to find those people also in your life to be able to. I personally felt like had I not crossed paths with Bhavna, maybe it would have been very difficult for me to understand this side of fashion, because this is never talked about.
You know, one of the most interesting experiences for me was, first I did fashion, right? Then I decided to specialize. Now, ghar aake main kya bolu, log ko kya padhi ho? I remember going to the our family doctor who's known me since I was a baby, and he was like a very proper, you know, old-fashioned type gentleman. And he's like, so what are you doing? And I'm looking at my mother. I'm like, what do I say to make this sound neutral? I'm doing design. Oh, what kind of design? And then I just said it. I was just like, lingerie design, doctor. And he's like, and he's looking so perplexed at his son. And the son goes, Papa, you know those bras and panties? And then there was dead silence. Because uske baad, what do you say? Or when I would tell people I'm doing fashion, oh, like a tailor. You know, there's a certain dismissal of things that are very hands-on. Like, I'm a very hands-on designer. I will sit with the tailor and stitch. I do not And especially in India, I find this. Like in London, in fact, tailors actually paid lots of money. But over here, this, I wanted to bring up the whole thing about caste and class because it's so relevant. And, you know, from my experience, what I found really interesting, I was sitting with an embroiderer learning how to embroider because I was like, I want to learn how to do this myself. I'm very OCD about it. And he was just like, what is this woman on? Like, just be like the other, like ladies who just get stuff done. And he was doing a stick and poke tambour embroidery, which is a craft that is passed down from father to son. And a lot of the workforce of embroiderers and tailors are men. And then I was like, Sui dhaga se kaun sa hota? He's like, madam, wo ladies embroidery, aapko wo kyun karna hai? So there, the fact that there is this distinction between the kind of work men get, which is meant to be skilled, and women are just turpai ladies. They're not actually given that much work, or they're seen as less than. The men tailors are seen as superior. The more women that come on board with this in terms of making, in terms of designing, in terms of running the factories, I think the brand Zivame has done a good job because at least they're making the customer experience better for women, so it's less awkward. But I think the more we talk about it, the more I think we'll see change in this area because it is something we have to wear every day. And just because it's something that's so close to women doesn't mean we should ignore it or dismiss it as frivolous because...
Much of fashion, much of what we consume every day, and I am using a very deliberate term here, consume, is very much a product of a much larger system of forces that are constantly dictating every choice and are dictating what is normal, what is blended in, what is not blended. I'm just trying to problematize choice and say that it can be so difficult to locate and to say that I am claiming my own agency and my own choice in the kind of clothes that I wear is so difficult to distinguish from.
Because what are you being subconsciously influenced by? Yeah,
correct. The aesthetics of Instagram, for example, there is such a specific photographability that your outfit must have for it to be good. Like so many times I have just worn an outfit, felt extremely great about it, all right? It happened actually just today. Felt extremely great about it. There was a picture and it looked either like faded, you know, merged in the background, whatever. And immediately my perception of how I felt in that outfit changed. The male gaze has become just a larger...
Actually, when you say that, now I'm beginning to relate to Deepa's like choice exhaustion because I'm... Sometimes I just don't wanna. But you know, Aru, that's the thing that can be said. What you pointed out, a very interesting cycle of events, but fashion in many ways is like politics. It's like there are certain things that are like, it's the same ideas basically, but they move in cycles. But then over time, those cycles do progress in a certain direction. Like, you know, you'll have 20 years liberal and then things will fall apart and then suddenly everybody will go right wing for 20 years, except those of us who are like continue to be liberal constantly. But you know what I mean. So with fashion, it's interesting because it does trickle up and trickle down in several ways. Like every period has what is considered the height of fashion or what is considered the establishment, right? And then that thing trickles from very high up down to all layers, and then everybody's wearing it. So what used to be new and avant-garde and brave and daring and risky is suddenly the norm because everybody's doing it. Then somebody will come and do the extreme opposite of this, right? So for example, through the 90s, everything was very minimal. Everything was very low-key. And then through the 2000s, it became a little more. Yeah, but in the 80s, it was all about power dressing, right? In the 70s, everything was free-flowing and easy and whatever. But during World War II, people were far more austere about how they dress. But then in the 50s, everything, when the economy started doing well, everybody wanted to wear lots of fabric. You know, like skirt lengths during World War II literally went up because there was not enough fabric. That was not a choice. It was like, okay, guys, give this fabric, you know, to make parachutes or whatever. Like, that's why hemlines went up. But then one way to show that times were good and the war was over is people wear more fabric. And that, of course, trickles across to different parts of the world. That trickles across to, you know, So that's the thing. It's fashion, in a way, is a reflection of what is happening around you. So that thing about choice you said, that also applies to freedom of thought, freedom of speech. What has been said to me by my parents? What am I questioning and rebelling against? Am I rebelling because it makes sense? Or am I rebelling just because I want to rebel? you know, like, you know, for every bra burner, I'm just like, did you realize that the first bras were meant as a pro, like they were seen as a better, more feminist alternative to corsets. And when it came to corsets, the first corsets women wore outside enabled them to do things like go horse riding or to play sports. So the first corsets were actually us zamane ka sports bras, right? So I think that applies to, say, any political idea or whatever. How much of it is what you were taught in school, what you grew up with, what Miranda House said feminism should be, versus, nay, we want to not be feminists. We just want to be different from everybody, you know? So I think the important thing is to constantly question. But again, remember that you don't have to question everything. You can pick your battles. That's okay. Like, there's no wrong or right way to do this. As long as you're not bringing somebody else down for doing what they want to do, I think it's fine.
As a child, I remember in the place that I used to live in, like, eastern parts of UP, in, like, a small town. And women around me who were specially wearing saris. So my mother and everyone other than my, like, her age, even people in my family, they won't wear any lingerie. So they won't wear a panty unless you're on your periods. And I remember, like, over a period of time and after masters, like, we used to have this conversation, Bhavna and I mostly, because post periods, we used to use pads earlier. So post periods, there would be, like, we would get rashes and everything. And I stopped wearing a panty. And over a period of time, I realized that I don't need to wear a panty all the time. Like, why is there a requirement to wear this all the time? And so many of us in the class would have these conversations. Like, I remember my entire master's, I've not worn a bra because it was just comfortable. I would just, like, wear a t-shirt and go to my class. And it was a safe, in that sense, felt like a safe space. So I never had to think so much about it. And then again, this is something I observed when I was in Madhya, that after a certain age, so, like, after you're married and you're old enough, above 35, 40 women who are married who had, like, 3-4 children, then they would just, as you said, just wear a dupatta and they don't need a bra or they don't need any other.
Because you're desexualized by that point.
Yes, also. Exactly. It also might not be something that they're very comfortable with. I mean, that's,
yeah,
that's
another thing. Absolutely. And at that point, you're allowed to exercise some control or choice with your body because you're no longer in that age bracket of being needing to be monitored probably for your sexuality. Yeah. This whole narrative construction around, like, how fatal saggy boobs. And this is deeply indoctrinated into me, I have to say. Till date, I will wear an underwire bra even though it cuts into my fucking skin. Even because in my head, I have really saggy boobs. And whatever, I've told myself or some stupid movie has told me or some friend has told me. I can't even locate where.
Haru, can you please send me your bra so I can remove the wire? First of all, okay. I wear underwire bras sometimes. It's the biggest myth in the lingerie industry that underwire is what gives you support. It's not underwire. Quite the contrary. It is literally the back part of your bra, which is the wing. And having nice, flat, broad, thicker straps. And you don't have to wear and I'll tell you what an underwire does. It is literally what a rubber band does to your hair. It takes a mass and it confines it to a small space. So it's more for appearance reasons. But does it actually affect how much your boobs sag or don't sag? The breasts are not a muscle. It's a gland, right? So you can't actually control.
I used to find this idea so romanticized when people say, ki, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you take off your bra and it feels so good. And it's so true. Like, if you're wearing an underwire bra, it legit feels like you have, like, you have freed the nips. Like, it's like, it's a true, like, freedom. But at the same time, I'm still so uncomfortable even walking around my house without a bra. Because when I feel my boobs sag or when I feel them jiggle, I think there is something anatomically off. That's not how they're supposed to feel. And I feel like that in itself, if it changes na in my brain, like, I feel like quick, instead of doing surgery to my bras, if you can do some surgery to my brain and, like, just get my brain to start accepting that boobs fucking jiggle, they will jiggle. Right. Okay,
First of all, I think we do need to desexualize them to an extent. Yes, they're beautiful. They're aesthetically appealing. Men like them. Theek hai. But they don't only exist to please men. I mean, they have a function, and or they may need not have that function, but they are a part of it. And women are constantly made to feel inadequate. And that is something I think the advertising industry has done, because they need to buy a product because, oh my God, if I don't have this, I am less than. I think that is one of my bones to pick with the fashion industry and advertising. But because a good bra, like this lingerie expert, I mean, I'm going to quote her and say this, but actually, like, okay, a bra is actually a metaphor for how women are perceived in society. It needs to be pretty also, needs to be supportive also, needs to be, there are all these expectations on it. You know, like, but has anybody thought about the poor bra itself? Like there's so much pressure on actually, you know, you needn't wear one. If you want to wear one, you wear one.
And there can be a bra that supports, a bra that comforts, a bra that that makes you feel sexy. And they can all be separate.
They can all be separate. They can also be the same thing. They needn't be, you know, there needn't be the schism between, oh my God, functional bras are, you know, like I feel okay buying them because it's a matter of fact. But something sexy, oh, but I'm single. Who will I wear it for? You can wear it for yourself.
What I really want us to end with is like, two or three things or one thing that each of us could share that we feel has like shifted for us our fashion, our relationship to fashion, like a tip, trick, hack, whatever, hack against patriarchy, whatever that is within this fashion, clothing, lingerie realm. Of course, the most obvious being get a well-fitted bra, which I've been proselytizing since the end of time. So that is what I'll sort of start us off with. But what would you say are like interesting things that you've like tips and tricks? Guys, this is also because Shravanti requested. She's like, you can't do an episode on fashion without giving us fashion tips.
There's a perception, there's a right kind of fashion, there's a wrong kind. I don't think that applies. I think fashion is diverse. It's something everyone does. So whatever you do, be authentic to you, because that's the thing that will make you feel confident and comfortable. I know what works for me. I never actually follow trends as they are out there. I sort of know what works for me. I'll experiment once in a while. But what I tell people, like styling clients or whatever, is I will try and figure out what they like. I will not impose what I like on them.
Actually, my tip is taking off from that. If you find something that looks good on you, like a silhouette or a textile or a certain kind of thing that you feel good in, just get a good tailor and replicate the hell out of it. I have 7 versions of the same, you know, open-fronted blazer in every possible color and block print that you can think of. And I just throw it on top of like basic tops, and it works for me.
I agree. That is something I do myself as well, yeah.
I don't have a fashion tip. I have a tip specifically for Shravanti, because this is something I learned from her only. Is that if you have choice fatigue and if you don't understand fashion, find a best friend that can do that for you. That's it. Find a person. Simple. I mean, all of this makes sense, but then I know that if I enter a shop, I will just lose my shit because I just get too confused when I look at so many things. So I'm just like, okay. I drag Bhavna with me and I'm like, tu kar le yaar, please just do this.
Deepa. Find the thing in your closet you like the most, that you feel comfortable in, that you feel happy in. Get that in a bunch of different colors. And just wear that. Let that be your signature look. I'm sorry, the editor of Vogue, Anna Wintour, has one haircut. And that is it. It doesn't change. It is her haircut. And she's comfortable with it. And she's not changed it in the last God knows how many years. That's the thing. It's you don't have to constantly wear something. Find what works for you. What makes you happy. That eliminates choice fatigue.
One last practical fashion tip. Openly compliment people, and especially women, when you like what they wear. If there is something you admire, there is something so deeply rewarding about hearing it from women. I have to say, like, there's just something so deeply rewarding. It just immediately breaks the shackle of, I am wearing this dress to compete with you.
So I'm so glad you made that point, because women, instead of competing with each other, we should actually pull together and do this. Because again, another thing patriarchy often pushes us into doing is cutting each other down because there's this competition.
Yeah, because this idea that it is male attention, that we are all, that is the ultimate end point, and that is always in limited supply. So let's all women, you know, fight with each other and compete with each other. So like, just give compliments. We put out episodes every week. You can DM us on Insta at FursatFeminism. You can email us at FursatFeminism@gmail.com. Tell us about your bra journeys. We'd love to know. And we're on every podcasting platform. You can leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews help us a lot in reaching new people. So do that. Thank you so much. Thank you, Arshika. We'll see you next week. Bye,
you guys.
Bye. Bye.